This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Every trans story is different, not just from the personal perspective, but it also along the spectrum and diversity of what it means to be trans for every individual. Does this lead to cis individuals using that as an excuse to be uninformed or unaware about the trans experience? Or do we need to create better pathways for education and understanding?
Earlier today, I spoke to Shoshana Rosenberg, a trans feminine queer academic and musician, who shed some light on queer community building and moving beyond grief. So yeah. To start with, how are you feeling on Transgender Day of Remembrance?
I'm actually feeling an interesting combination of, I suppose, kind of a bit of distance from all of it. Like, we have an event happening in a few hours, but I don't really have a lot of connection to the community where I'm living at the moment, so it's kind of to the side. But also, I've spent all morning actually specifically doing research for a review on trans kids and research on trans kids, and have found some really awful stuff. So
yep, that is unsurprising.
That as well. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I've always struggled with on Trans Day of Remembrance is that we don't really have very good statistics from Australia. We don't have a sort of our own list or, you know, a real understanding of how much transphobic violence happens, because it so often goes unreported as transphobic violence. How do you...
Sure.
How can we still sort of have these days and gatherings for our community and have community grievings when we can't even really understand the depth of what we're facing in Australia?
Well, I think that what's interesting when you think about where Trans Day of Remembrance came from, particularly in the US end of things, is that in a lot of ways it's quite grassroots. So in a lot of ways, it isn't about the statistics, and it's so much more about actually each community grieving the people that they've lost. And I suppose in that way, you know, rather than relying on statistics and maybe like an official released list of people who've been murdered and all that kind of clinical kind of stuff, something that's like equally gruesome and clinical, I think that maybe the way that we can kind of currently engage within Australia is actually to commemorate the people that we're aware of that either died or have experienced horrific violence in the last year, and a way to, you know, acknowledge those who've survived as well as commemorate those who've passed away because of either direct violence or because of more systematic violence and that kind of thing.
I mean, you say that it is gruesome, and to me it sometimes does feel a bit gruesome having these kinds of days where we just list off all of the members of our community that we've lost. How can we make this into a more community-building exercise and not just another trans narrative that is just miserable and depressing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question, because there's always this kind of air of re-victimization with the way that a lot of people engage with Trans Day of Remembrance. And unfortunately, the one that I attended last year, it was to such an extent where everyone sat in silence and watched an officially released DVD that just listed all of the names of the people who passed. And to me, it was just bizarrely distant and kind of offensive. Like, you know, especially considering that a lot of this is about like speaking people's names. But, you know, it's like, how do we move beyond just kind of going, well, this is what happened, and kind of moving towards saying, well, what could potentially happen? And I would say that the way to do that is to actually think about this Day of Remembrance as part of a larger framework, I suppose. For my kind of background, I'm Jewish, and so for me, for example, the Day of Remembrance, the Holocaust Day of Remembrance, you don't just think about the people who passed away, you also think about what the other implications are and how each individual can actually address those aftershocks and those afterwaves. And I suppose that would maybe be one way that we can address that, is to actually use it as a way of activating.
Focus on the survivors as well, and how to try to ensure that there are more survivors next year.
Yeah, for sure. Like, as much as they're like nerdy and annoying, there's a really good propaganda quote about that, which is that on this Day of Remembrance, let us not kneel and pray for the dead, but let us stand and activate for the living to rescue those about to die. So it's like, actually, okay, well, yes, the horrible happen and people haven't survived and all that, but we actually need to use this energy not to just become inward and self-destructive and kind of individually and collectively re-victimizing, but actually also thinking about how we can move forward.
you mentioned that we do often experience re-victimization during these kinds of community grieving and mourning processes. How can we prevent re-victimization from turning into re-traumatization and continuing this trauma narrative of our community?
Well, again, I think that it's up to the tone and the way in which we present this stuff, but also the way in which we, I suppose, engage with that stuff beyond TDOR, because these narratives aren't just imposed and reinforced this one day a year. It's something that is ongoing, and that for many of us is also a reality. I've experienced this year, I've experienced at least two instances of physical violence, and, you know, like it's one of those things that is a perpetual thing in all of our lives. But yeah, again, it's actually a question of, I suppose in a way, it's actually asking yourself, well, what do you need when you're experiencing trauma and victimization? What do you actually require to heal? And I mean, for me personally, it's about community and connectivity, but also it's about that assurance of that there is stability, that there is hope, that there is something beyond this moment, this horrible moment. And I suppose maybe that's one thing that's kind of lacking with how a lot of people seem to be engaging with TDOR and also with our narrative of people who experience systematic and individual violence. And yeah, maybe that's the way to do it, is to actually talk about how do we, you know, what happens after? What's the hot cocoa to the, you know, what happens afterwards?
Do you have any idea on how to, particularly with our allies within the LGB community, but also wider allies, how do we get them to keep the rage alive and to keep fighting for us when we're aware that everybody's taking a bit of a sigh of relief at the moment after the postal survey, and a well-deserved one as well? But how can we get them to keep seeing us as important every other day of the year and keep making spaces for us?
Well, I mean, I think that comes down to like a much more complicated thing around this divide that we keep talking about, supposed divide between our experiences and the experiences of anyone who we consider an ally, a cis ally, or anything along those lines. And I think that actually the way that I've found that it is best to engage with this stuff is to actually acknowledge the way in which our experiences align with, and sometimes actually almost completely duplicate, those experiences of people who don't necessarily fit into the same categories us. I know plenty of cis men and cis women. I know plenty of trans masculine people and people who've had completely separate experiences to me, supposedly, categorically, who've had very similar horrible experiences to me. But I feel that that's the way to kind of do it, is to actually talk about the way in which, yes, trans violence is this very specific thing, and particularly trans misogyny, but transphobia in general. But actually, my experiences are very similar to yours, and I would ask anyone who considers themselves my ally to contemplate how they respond to their feelings and their experiences, and to apply that same kind of logic to me in the same way that I try to do it with them for the most part.
Does it frustrate you ever that the main thing that people in our communities tend to bond over is our shared experiences of trauma?
For sure, yeah. And I think it can be dangerous. And I think that in a lot of situations, I think that it doesn't, you know, I recognize that trauma is a very difficult thing to negotiate, both on an individual level, let alone at a community/collective level. But yeah, it is something that seems to burden us in this way, that like it affects our media consumption, it affects how we interact with each other, it affects how we interact with ourselves, it affects how we engage with workplaces, the academy, like institutions in general. And that's a difficult position to come from. If you feel that you're on the back foot, that is a very difficult thing to then become, not just resistant and reactive, but to actually become proactive and become turn it into something that is more about actually having agency in those situations. So yeah, it does frustrate me. And I often, it's not that I veer away from those conversations, but I often do try and take those conversations away from, I'm very sorry that that happened to you, to, I would love to be able to support you so that maybe this doesn't happen again, or if it does, that you feel less affected by it.
So trying to build community resilience on an interpersonal level as well.
For sure. And that's an individual practice as much as it is, I suppose, a more traditional community-based practice as well. You know, I think that it's something that we each individually engage in with how we talk about ourselves to other people and how we talk about ourselves to ourselves.
Well, most queer people tend to become sort of mini therapists just throughout our interactions with each other.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's part of also, I suppose, often being looked at as people with that level of experience, because we do experience trauma, and therefore most of us have learned to negotiate it in one capacity or another. But certainly those points where you actually admit to yourself that just because you've experienced trauma does not make you an expert in that area, but also that B, sometimes the time isn't right to talk about the trauma, and sometimes the time is to talk about other things rather than just the event that occurred and how awful it made you feel in that very moment. And it's more about what's happening now, what's happening tomorrow, what's happening next year.
And that's always important to remember, what's happening tomorrow and how we keep making sure that we're protecting each other and acknowledging each other's experiences. Thanks so much for talking to me, Shoshana.
Not a problem.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.